And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonablest Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me, as always, Eric Green. What's up, man?
Not much. I just finished reading this morning The Last Picture Show by the recently passed Larry McMurtry. And it's a bit of a bummer, but it's one of the better coming-of-age books I've read, and I'm a big fan of the genre. But yeah, I'm maybe a bit low energy because of that and the gray skies that greet us this morning.
Wow, getting after it early in the morning with the reading, eh?
Well, I woke up earlier than I intended, and I was like, you know, Walter, as usual, was not eager to go outside, let's say, and I only had like 15 pages left, so I was like, let's finish this up.
You are, I can't tell if you're a stronger man than me or a weaker man than me for going to bed with only 15 pages left in a book. I don't think I'd be able to do it.
Yeah, the problem was it was 1:30, and I was like, I could finish this, but then it's 2, and what if the ending makes me more awake, and then I'm not falling asleep till 3, so... I was certainly tempted, but it was when I looked at the clock, it was later than I anticipated. So it's not like really like a cliffhanger-y book. It's more of a vibes book. So it's not like I need to find out what happens. With a page turner, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that necessarily.
Are you a Are you a read in bed or read in the living room?
I should read more in the living room, but I usually read in bed.
Because you have a partner and that requires you to keep the light on, you mean?
No, I just think I like reading in bed means I don't read as much because I get sleepy.
Right.
Yeah, like it's just not conducive to more reading, which I think we'd all be served to do, me, myself included, for sure.
I would love to do more reading if my brain ever allowed me to. But, you know, sometimes it don't.
That is the case. We're scrambling for a segue here, I'm sure.
No, not at all. I mean, look, the people want to get to know us. The people want to find out what our lives are like, what we're all about.
Yeah, it was turned
I imagine.
In, so I was going to choose this for the movie club that I'm in that we've been doing remotely. Because there was like a multi Academy Award nominated film based on the book. But now it costs, for a while it was free on Prime, but now it's gone back to like $20 rental. And, you know, I'm not going to make everybody do that. But a young Jeff Bridges was in it, which is interesting to me.
And if you want to complain about having to pay for content, you can go to, there's our segue. Now, in seriousness, if you're not subscribed to The Written Side, theathletic.com/we the six, there's always a good deal going there. I think it's $3.99 a month right now. Or click any of our articles. Sometimes there are flash sales, things like that. There's been some good stuff of late. Obviously, you know, we're late enough in the year that every game feels like a referendum on the direction of the team. Eric, you're very nihilistic before we came on the air here about that. Before we get into the state of the team and the fact that a 2-2 week leaves absolutely nobody happy, we have some news to take care of. The first piece of that news is that shortly before we came on to record, the Raptors, or I guess, I don't know if they've physically signed it, but Shams and I reported that the Raptors will sign Freddie Gillespie to a 2-year minimum deal. obviously he's made good on those two 10-day opportunities. The deal is kind of your standard developmental deal where the second year is at the minimum. It's non-guaranteed. He'll get a small guarantee if he's still on the roster at some point in the summer. And then if he makes the team, it gets fully guaranteed. So not dissimilar to Utah's deal that we talked about last week. Gillespie's small early offseason guarantee is significantly less, as you'd expect. It's only 50K, whereas Watanabe's is 375K. But that's, you know, Watanabe's in his third year. He's played a bigger role. He has a longer track record. Gillespie's kind of the developmental special, not quite the Hinkie special, because here's where there's one more opportunity to get mad at Alex Len before he ends the Raptors play-in bid in 2 weeks.
I know exactly where you're going. But
yes. So because the Raptors gave Alex Len a chunk of the mid-level that was just barely higher than his minimum contract. And they did that for like trade flexibility reasons because of the way minimum contracts are handled versus, you know, a guy who's on just a random number. However, not keeping a part of that mid-level open is why Watanabe and Gillespie could only be signed to two-year deals this year and next. You need cap space or an exception to sign someone beyond 2 years at the minimum. Now, I don't know that, you know, they would have been open to a Hinkie special. I don't know that the Raptors would have gone that far. They generally haven't gone 4 years on those kind of deals. But a three-year de-escalating guarantee setup is, you know, it's generally a win-win for guys in these spots. But anyway, be mad at Alex Len when Freddie Gillespie hits restricted free agency at the end of next season.
Just something to keep in mind when I'm handing out postseason grades for the management team.
Yes.
Yeah, don't be mad at Alex Len. Be mad at Masai and Bobby, I think, is the lesson here.
Oh, a botch job.
Yeah.
Look, we have a lot of respect for Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri and the job they've done over their time in Toronto. This past offseason at the center position was obviously not their best work, as much as it looked like it was fine at the time. And the thing that probably highlights that best is the fact that Gillespie has come in, plucked from the G League, an undrafted rookie, and he's played 16 minutes a game over 10 games. And he's been, I don't want to say better than Baines, because Baines has had some stretches where he hasn't hurt the team's minutes and you see what the team thought he could be. But he's been different than Baines, and he certainly earned the minutes over giving Baines another shot. And anytime a 10-day is jumping in and contributing, obviously something has gone wrong somewhere. So in addition to the big feature story that I did on Freddie Gillespie right when they first signed him, which I'd urge you to check out at theathletic.com/Raptors or theathletic.com/WeTheSix, you could also take a look at, I ranked every 10-day in Raptors history. They have had 31 players on 10-day contracts. And to give you an idea of just how rare it is for someone on a 10-day to play as much as Gillespie, he ranked fourth of those 31 in minutes played over the life of his 10-day, topped only by Allen Anderson, Ben Uzo, and Skip DeMailou, Ray Feralston. He also more steals plus blocks than any other 10-day in franchise history. Up there for rebounds as well. He might have moved into first. Yeah, he moved into first in rebounds last night. So pretty good. Pretty good for 20-day audition. You know, we don't really need to unpack what this says about the center position. I think we've done that enough in talking about him and Ken Birch. But Eric, before we look forward, let's look back. I know that you've read my 10-day ranking because you commented, this is why I subscribe to The Athletic. I assume that's what you commented. I didn't read it. Do you have a favorite 10-day guy or a favorite 10-day memory? And where does Gillespie rank for you?
Well, Gillespie's up there, but because I've been covering the team since 2008, like most of my 10-day memories certainly are about the behind the scenes stuff. My comment was actually about Damone Brown and you calling him an Eric Kareen favorite in your piece, which is true, But the reason he's a favorite is because what I was doing while you were talking, other than listening to you intently, was looking up the box score from the game in which the, you know, the then 9-28 Raptors beat the Michael Jordan Wizards with 8 players available. And 3 of those guys were on 10-day contracts, including Damone Brown, who went 6-for-10 in 32 minutes, scoring 13 points. And Rafer Alston had 13-11 in almost 34 minutes. So I think that's at the top of my 10-day memory. Memories. Alan Anderson's first sort of scrum after signing a 10-day and talking about, you know, getting, I forget what league he was talking about now, but like his memories of playing internationally and getting pelted with like bottle caps and and all these things, like a really, really was a vivid sort of addition to the season, which was like yet another in the long line of Raptor seasons going sideways. And, you know, he ended up being a pretty valuable piece, not only for the Raptors, but for the Nets after that.
Against the Raptors, yeah, no less.
So he had a nice little post 10-day career after being out of the league for a long while. And my other one is Linton Johnson III, because it became an inside running joke.
Rovin just filled me in on this one.
Yeah, that the Raptors never officially released him, which I guess you don't have to do if you're on
right,
a 10-day contract.
Expires.
It just expires. But like the Raptors just never said anything about Linton Johnson III no longer being with the team. So like 3 years later, we would like bring up, hey, is Linton Johnson available to talk to? And so those, and what's his deal? Is he still on the roster? So I think those are my top 10-day memories. I don't know if that's what the listeners want, but that's what the listeners are getting.
Hey, it's good to have a throwback like that. I think for any of our younger listeners or newer listeners, like newer in terms of newer to the fan base, maybe you came along during the championship run or in the We the North era. There are some throwbacks there. You know, I know not everyone, I know not everyone is as fond of Reggie Slater as, say, our friend James Herbert is. I know not everyone's going to be as fond as Damone Brown as you are. Yeah, I'd imagine. Plus, too, in recent years, the Raptors really haven't used a 10-day that much. No. Nigel Hayes was the only one over like I think a 6 or 7 year stretch before the championship season. Obviously, because Ben Uzo ruined the franchise and ruined 10 days for everyone. So and then Moreland and Meeks were like they were 10 days to meet the roster requirements, not to like see what these guys have and stuff. So. I still think Nigel Hayes is my number one for shooting the arrows and just like any positive vibes he built with Dwayne Casey killing them. Freddie Gillespie's up there.
In that game against the Wizards, by the way, Jerome Williams with 14 points and 20 rebounds.
There you go.
And Morris Peterson played 46 minutes.
Jeez. That was, I forget which guy it was now, but one of my favorite ones was going through the old 10 days. It might have been Dan O'Sullivan. like started and played 44 minutes and then got waived the next day.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. he got his showcase. You can't say he did it.
Yeah. That's it was either him or Art Long. I think it was Dan O'Sullivan. Anyway.
Well, Art Long was one of the three guys in this game and he played just 14 and a half minutes, the least of the 8 Raptors who played that evening. Not with the team. Vashawn Leonard, Chris Jeffries, Lindsey Hunter, Nate Huffman, Vince Carter, Michael Bradley, and Mamadou Njai.
Wow. What a list. All right. Continuing on with some news stuff here that we've got to touch up. Gary Trent Jr. has missed the last couple days dealing with a left leg contusion. Nick Nurse didn't sound like he's too concerned of it. I've been joking with Dan Hackett of Raptors HQ that there's some tomfoolery going on here. Gary Trent Jr. is one start or 57 minutes played from achieving what is called starter criteria, which would more than double his qualifying offer and his cap hold in the summer. So it's like I'm on watch for if he comes up just short of that and suddenly, you know, maybe he sits out the next game and then comes back for one and then they lose both of those and suddenly Gary Trent's done for the year to keep his qualifying offer lower. Always looking out for the shady stuff, Eric.
It'd be interesting. I mean, it doesn't really hurt Trent in any tangible way because, you know, unless something crazy happens, he's going to sign a new deal.
For some guys, that would hurt leverage wise because you can't as convincingly be like, well, I'm going to sign the qualifying offer.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any worry about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would be interesting if the Raptors and him and his team had a sort of wink wink agreement, but it's pretty, if he play, there are 10 games left.
Yeah. If he plays two or three games.
Yeah. If he plays in five of them and doesn't play 57 minutes, like, can the league do anything about that?
I think they'd have to, like, his people would have to file agreements about it.
They wouldn't, presumably. Yeah.
And, like, he's out with an injury. It's not like he was listed as rest. Yeah. So I think maybe the Raptors learned their lesson there.
Anyway.
As Kyle Lowry said, really, 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 really well rested at this point.
What a stupid season. We should really say it once an episode. What a stupid season.
It is a dumb year. As evidenced by Ed posted a graphic of all the time each team has missed versus how many guys their opponents have been missing. And like, I thought the Raptors would rank higher.
Yeah.
But they're just another team. They've averaged, based on my numbers, a little over 2.5 guys out per game. And they're just another team in those rankings. Now, part of that is, like, if I included empty roster spots during that time, then the Raptors look a lot worse because, you know, that's not injury luck, but it is like, hey, how thin is this team running? That would bump the average up and move them higher up the rankings. But the season is dumb when the Raptors are missing 2.5 or 3 guys a game, and they're just another team.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, oh yeah, the other injury thing. We don't have a timeline on Paul Watson. Jalen Harris is getting close. Nick Nurse said Tuesday that he's not expecting Chris Boucher back anytime soon. Boucher sprained his MCL. Looking at some history around the league, the language of sprained MCL is not enough for us to go off of. There are, as I understand it, 3 different grades of that. So you're looking at a day-to-day injury all the way up to 6+ weeks and potential surgery down the line. It doesn't sound like Boucher's is as bad as that extreme end, but we know he won't be reevaluated until tomorrow at the very earliest, based on the initial release from the team. I guess, again, we don't have enough information to judge off of here, but if the Raptors are going to make this play and push, say they pull it off, sure. Just how important is Boucher to their chances of A, winning a play-in game, and B, making a dent in a playoff series? Because as much as the rotation has stabilized a little bit here, the bench scoring without Boucher and without Boucher and Trent at the same time, I guess, it's been a bit of a struggle, Eric.
There was a lineup last night And I think it, starting the second quarter, I think we saw it again to start the fourth quarter. It was Van Vliet and Flynn, and then Utah, Stanley Johnson, and Freddie Gillespie, and it got swung to the weak side, and it was like a Utah Stanley Johnson action. They might have actually got a foul off of it, but you know, I'm sort of thinking, oh my god, like that, you know, you could have all the point guards on the floor that you want. It's not really, you can only do so much when your weak side options are that limited. Boucher's obviously been really good, especially offensively this year. Trent has not found his role off the bench, but he's certainly a threat, a credible threat. And yeah, like in both the Knicks and the Nets losses this week, the common theme was the transition lineups just didn't work. And then the starters couldn't really get back into it fully. There's just not enough there to keep them afloat against better competition, and they are about to face better competition for four straight games. Who's after? Anyway, for on this West Coast road trip. And Boucher, I think, like, if Freddie Gillespie struggled a little bit over the last few games, I'd say it has not a little to do with Boucher being absent and maybe stretching the floor in certain ways and providing, you know, some of that weak side help, maybe an interior defense that sort of cover up for some of Gillespie's inexperience and flaws. So I think he's an incredibly important piece, maybe not to the extent where he has by far the most win shares on this team, but still important. And it's going to be tough. Like we said it all year, the margin for error for this roster just isn't very big. And even losing, you know, two guys off the bench, your top two guys off the bench, and finally having a starting group, you can't really afford that. So it's going to be difficult.
So I was going to save this for a little later on when we talk about Ken Birch's fit and how good he's looked as a pairing with Kyle Lowry. But let's just talk about it now since, you know, we're kind of talking about the rotations and what those might look like. How much confidence has the Raptors finding a starting five given you? The group of Lowry, Van Vliet, Siakam, Ananobi, and Birch has started the last four games in a row together. They've played 92 minutes together total with a net rating of plus 23.1. They've been very good offensively. They've been very good defensively. They've been one of the Raptors, not one of, they've been the Raptors' best rebounding lineup that's played any amount of minutes on the year, really. They've had a criminally low turnover rate, but basically, you know, everything is suggesting that lineup is pretty effective. And on top of that, what did I just lose in my stat sheet there? Oh yeah. On top of that, I hate how NBA.com resets to per game when you're looking at totals. Anyway, on top of that, the success of that lineup is also not floated by like unsustainable three-point shooting. That group is shooting 37% on threes, which is right within what you'd expect for a lineup with that kind of true shooting talent and with the Raptors' overall three-point shooting on the year. There is a little bit of opponents are shooting really poorly on threes against that group, just 31%. But even if that normalized a little bit, you'd expect that group to be pretty solid. Like they're a plus 41 in 91 or 92 minutes. That's you're gonna need to bang a couple more threes to put a dent in that. I think given the way that group has performed, given the fact that even when he's talked about liking the versatility and flexibility of changing his starting lineups up, Nick Nurse has tended to, when everyone is available, stick with a set five. You know, there's an exception there when the Raptors were just rotating starting lineups because they had no players. I don't think that that qualifies. And even then, he started the Stanley Johnson, DeAndre Bembry, Aaron Baines group three times. So I think he would prefer a set five. He's talked about his bench as Malachi Flynn, Gary Trent, Utah, and Freddie Gillespie or Chris Boucher when Chris Boucher is available. Do you think this is the five now? And how much do you think that, like, projecting forward, how much do you think that that helps the three or four bench guys who are going to be regulars? You can include Trent or not, but, like, that extra level of role certainty and Nurse's ability to kind of mix and match with transition units. You know, we all love versatility and flexibility in the starters, but how big a breath of fresh air do you think this is for the rotation to have some kind of role stability right now?
I certainly think it's nice. As Nurse said yesterday, it's not like the Raptors have jumped teams based on their starting lineup. It's sort of, if don't quote me on this, but there certainly have been a few games where they've sort of taken over in the third quarter and really made a nice run there. But, you know, just thinking from the perspective of a role player, of a Utah, of a Malachi Flynn, it has to be nice to know approximately when you're going to come in, approximately when you're going to come out, you know, who you're going to be playing with, what your role's going to be, what you're going to be asked to do in those minutes. I do think, barring some sort of, and there could be all sorts of malfeasance. If this trip gets away from the Raptors, you'll probably see some more resting or injuries or whatever. As if they get further away from the play-in race. But, you know, stability is it's a nice thing. And if you, the interesting thing is, like, projecting forward to next year, which is an impossibility, but, you know, what happens with Lowry and or the money currently earmarked for Lowry becomes a very fascinating thing, because it could be a world in which Trent goes back to the starting lineup and then they're maybe looking to fill in the bench with the money they have left over. Anyway, I'm probably getting ahead of myself. It's been really nice to have some predictability. I'm sure Nick Nurse feels better about it too. And I think I don't think they played well against Brooklyn, especially offensively, some sort of silly turnovers at times and just not a lot of great shot making. But I think that game against New York, like, if you look at it from, like, possession by possession, they probably played the more sound basketball and they died by a series of, you know, of Julius Randle and Derrick Rose mid-rangers, which has
very happened. Difficult Julius Randle shot profile.
Which has happened. Like, that happens. They've been great this year, especially Randle. And, like, there's a reason that the Knicks are where they are and the Raptors are where they are. But
dare I say it, go Knicks?
Yeah, sure. It's fun. As much as anything can be fun this year, the Knicks are fun. But the Raptors played the way they wanted to play that game. And I think you've seen a lot more of a predictable style of basketball and predictable levels of production. And the one thing that's hurt them since Trent and Boucher has been out, is that it's just been difficult to cobble together those transition units. And I think maybe that's where, as good as the starters have been, maybe you have to go to a sub a bit earlier than Nick Nurse has been going to. Like, I think he ran the starters maybe for 8 or 9 straight minutes in the third quarter against the Nets, and they were playing well and they were making a run. And so I don't blame him, but also that probably means you're going to have to rely on bench heavy minutes for a longer period of time, or at least more consecutive minutes.
The starting unit has averaged nearly 8 minutes together at the start of these 4 games, and then about 7.5 at the start of the third quarter. Now, it's good of those first and third quarters. They've won 6, lost 1, and I'll call it a tie. They lost it by 1 point.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, 6-1-1 in those stretches. It's paying off, but they went 2-2 over those games. And the Knicks game, obviously, the bench just couldn't hang at all. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think maybe the hook comes at 6 minutes instead of 8 minutes for the first guy or two in that group. But, you know, whether that's getting Lowry out early and Flynn spots in with the starters, and then you get Lowry leading the bench units at the top of the second and fourth instead of Van Vliet. I don't know how much that helps, but I think if we're looking ahead to the playoffs, I think that the honest answer might be this rotation goes down to eight, and instead of Gillespie off the bench, they maybe play small a bit more if Trent is healthy.
Probably. I would have trouble imagining Gillespie in there unless, I mean, they play the Sixers, in which, I mean, you don't want to throw Freddie Gillespie against Joel Embiid.
But, what is the quickest foul out in NBA history?
Ask Jake Voskal.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Anywhom, and to the extent that Nurse hasn't made those quicker subs, like, as we just mentioned, it's the first time they've really had any roster stability or rotation stability all year. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the slight adjustment comes against Denver on Thursday.
Also, finally having a working starting lineup, it's probably like having a new toy. Like, why he doesn't want to put it down?
Like,
if these guys keep winning their minutes, it gets harder, obviously, to be like, well, we should stop this run.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. Eric, you can see the push and pull of it all.
So, despite some of those positives, the Raptors only went 2-2 this week, which is the exact record that makes zero people happy. They beat Brooklyn, of course, without KD and James Harden in that game, but I still thought a pretty high quality win for the Raptors. It was their fourth in a row. They then lost to the Knicks, as we talked about. That was, you know, it certainly didn't feel like a 17-point game the way the game played out, but the Raptors bench had a tough night, and the Knicks were on another level with their shot making, especially Julius Randle. They then beat the Cavaliers on Monday, pretty straightforward. The Cavs on the second night of a back-to-back with not a lot of players and Kevin Love openly throwing a tantrum to get Malachi a 5-0 4-second run. And then they lost to the Nets on Tuesday. Durant back for that one for Brooklyn. And they just, you know, that's one where the Raptors just second night of a back-to-back against a very good team. Didn't have the juice, and that's fine. I thought process wise it was an okay game, other than kind of the second chance points, which continue to be an issue even as the Raptors rebound better on the offensive glass themselves. Kem Birch obviously had 52 offensive rebounds in that game, which was has to be some sort of record. He had 9, yeah, to be clear, which doesn't get him into the top 10 of Raptors offensive rebounding games, sadly. So the 2-2 record. Like, I'm joking a little bit in that it makes nobody happy, but the fan base still does seem a little split on, do you want to get to that play-in spot and try to make some noise and give Brooklyn or Philly a tough run in the first round? Or do you want to backtrack and improve your lottery odds? A 2-2 week does nothing for either of those things, right? The Wizards have only lost once in their last 9 or 10. The Pacers have at least stabilized a little bit. The Hornets are losing, but they're probably too far out of reach. And the Bulls are doing the same thing the Raptors are doing, which is winning when the fans don't want them to win and losing when the fans don't want them to lose. So it really hasn't gone, it hasn't pushed anything in either direction. These next couple of games will be a lot more, I think, decisive. One, because we're down to 10 games left on the schedule, and obviously the leverage of each of those increases. It's also, you know, if you've been happy with the Raptors' process improvements since, you know, maybe the start of April, we'll cut it off. They're 8-6 since then, even though they haven't been remarkably healthy. We're about to find out if the Raptors' process improvements and vibe improvements can hold up. They're going to play Their 10 remaining games include zero games against teams that aren't at least trying to make the play-in game. They've got Denver, Utah, the Lakers, and the Clippers, all playoff teams, all on the road on the West Coast. Then they've got the Wizards and Grizzlies back at home in Tampa, who are both fighting for their playoff lives. They get the Clippers again. Then they get the Bulls, Mavs, and Pacers to close out. The Mavs are fighting to avoid the play-in game and be in a proper playoff spot. And the Bulls and Pacers at that point, you know, could be fighting for play-in opportunities, could be decided. We don't really know. So there are no, you know, especially over the next seven, but maybe over the next 10, no soft spots here. We're going to learn if the Raptors, if the improvements they've been making and the positivity that Nick Nurse has had about his group over the last month can carry over against high quality competition. Now, I will say that the Raptors, while they are 1.5 games out of the play-in, Washington has an easier schedule the rest of the way and is maybe a little bit more motivated to make that push. The other side of things is that the train may have left on bottoming out anyway. There are 5 teams separated by 2 games in the lottery spots 7 through 11. The Raptors are, you know, right now would be 8th in lottery odds, but we're talking a one or two game swing in either direction for 5 of those teams, 7 through 11. You know, the 7th best playoff lottery odds isn't going to make anyone super excited, but probabilities are what they are. 7th gets you more odds than 8th and more than 9th, and it increases your average draft position. The idea of catching the bottom 6, though, might be gone, especially after that Cavs win. You know, the Raptors are 4.5 games out, we'll call it, of 6th last. So, you know, the wins might not be that damaging right now, as long as Washington and New Orleans and maybe Chicago are still winning. I know we've talked this to death, Eric, over the last couple of weeks, but where are you at? Like this is where your kind of pre-recording nihilism came in, that they're in purgatory and there's not a lot to be done with it, right? Just play the games.
Yeah. I still, like, you know, on this trip, I hope they go, you know, 4-0 or 0-4, like, from their perspective, just
I agree.
To clarify what makes sense over the last 6 games. Like, if by the end of this 4-game trip they've gone 2-2 and are like a game back from Washington, or even 2 games back from Washington and with the tiebreaker, it's not gonna do much to help. So, like, I feel less at a place, as you mentioned, I'm less at a place where it's like, oh, they really need to win this game, or it would serve them well to lose this game, because, you know, they have been fun to watch in some stretches of games and even full games. So, you know, there's value in seeing that continue just for the moment, and in getting some, you know, potential rotation pieces more experience as well. But at some point, you want to know, like, if that Bulls game is the battle for, what is it, 24th or 23rd, whatever you want to say. Like, you want to know how much you should be putting into that that effort when that game comes. I think it's, what, the second or third last game of the season or something like that. And if they're both out of it, if Washington has solidified that spot, we could see you know, Banuzzo game part 2 to some degree in terms of, at least in terms of some people not playing, if not for weird pieces having huge numbers. But yeah, like I don't think you really sweat each individual game on this trip the way we were maybe 2 weeks ago or a week. Like, we know, you know, Sacramento is 25-36, so the Bulls and the Raptors are sort of really tangled up there. You know, maybe the Pelicans fall back to them, but probably not. So you basically know the Raptors are going to be picking somewhere between 7th and 10th, or with those odds, and as things get more clear, maybe you go stronger one way or another, but I don't think on this particular trip you have to go there yet.
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry, something just came across my phone. Anyway, so yeah, let's look ahead, Eric. You know, I think, again, 2-2 is the worst case here. 4-0 or 0-4, depending on your perspective, better ways to go. We talked the rotations and stuff. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we make you predict?
Well, I'd just like to point out that I did predict the correct record last week, although, as usual, I didn't get all of the games. I went 2-2, as did the Raptors, I guess is what I'll say. No, I don't think I have any more Raptors points to make. I can't remember getting super mad at anybody recently, so it's probably all fine.
Cool.
So are we predicting this whole trip or just the first three games?
Just the first three, because I figure as much as we'll be sleepy, these three games are probably big enough for us to reconvene Monday instead of waiting the extra day and the extra game, right?
Yeah, sure.
So we'll go just to get back Denver, on the Utah, schedule. And the Lakers.
Yeah. I'll say win, loss, loss. I mean, loss is chalk, obviously. Something's telling me they're going to have one last beautiful game in them, maybe, and before fading away.
Sure. That seems as reasonable outcome as any. Yeah, and we get Big Honey, Nikola Jokic.
Oh, he's so good.
These games should be fun, although the idea of the team being back in Utah gives me bad vibes.
Yeah, but maybe it just lets us know that we've come a long way to wind up in the same place.
Sure. sounds appropriately depressing. All right, guys. We will talk to you next Monday after those three games. Sorry for being a little distracted there at the end. Again, theathletic.com/we the six. If you are not already subscribed to The Written Side, you can check out my 10-day rankings for Raptors history. You know, that feature on Freddie Gillespie. We'll have all of these games covered coming up, of course. And a little something coming Thursday from me, breaking down OG Anunoby's growth as a shot creator, which is pretty important. We didn't talk about it a lot here on the pod because there were some other things that required attention, and I didn't want to use all that stuff before the piece comes out.
Spoiler, so, he's been good.
Look forward to that. He's been really good lately. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the biggest takeaway from this whole stretch, but I'll let you talk about it, and maybe we dive deeper into it next week if it continues.
I think it will. He always has huge games against the Denver Nuggets for whatever reason. So here we go. All right, Eric. Thanks so much, man. You have a lovely week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, Blake. Thank you. Love you, Vladdy. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.